New World Witchery is possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors. We'd like to take a moment to recognize our producer-level Patreon supporters. Heather, Akia Branvansianach,
Raven Darkmoon, Wisdom Queen,
Regina, Jen Rue of Rue and Hyssop,
Little Wren, Christopher,
Tanner, Jody,
Jonathan at the Modern Southern Polytheist, Catherine,
Montine, Carol,
Sonara at theauburnsky.com, Sarah at Conjured Cardea,
The Trinket Witch, Jody, Victoria,
Sherry, and Athena Beth. To show your support and keep the show going, please consider visiting patreon.com/newworldwitchery and pledging $1 a month or whatever you can. And as always, thanks to all of our listeners.
Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
This time we're back to basics as we look at the elements.
We look at the different elemental systems that we've encountered and just how we incorporate elements into magical practice.
Hello, Corey.
Hello, Lane. Are you ready to summon earth, air, fire, water, heart? Go, heart. Planet! Okay. We got the Captain Planet joke out of the way at the beginning.
I wish I could remember the song that... Yes, I really wish I could remember the song that came after that, but all that like popped into my head was the X-Men theme song, and that's not quite right either.
No. Captain Planet, he's a hero.
There you
gonna
go.
Gonna take pollution down to zero. Yep.
That's it. Yep, thank
that's
you.
It. You know why? Because I'm the element of heart. I remember these things. My T is my man. So.
That's right.
Okay. So yeah, we had to get the obligatory Captain Planet joke out of the out of our systems kind of early on. Because what we're talking about is something that is kind of a big deal for a lot of people that we've never really addressed, and we'll probably talk a little bit about maybe why we haven't particularly addressed it as part of the show. But the concept of elements is really, really big in a lot of people's magical practices, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit, but maybe we should start with kind of an idea. What is an element to you, or what are elements? When you think of that term, what does it bring to mind?
I've always kind of subscribed to the Wiccan ideology. Is that the right word for elements? Which is, you know, each element corresponds to a direction, and they kind of work together and in harmony to help create certain outcomes in spellcasting. Okay. So, North, Earth, South, Fire. Is that right? Man, it's been a while. Because, it's been a while since I've kind of like worked closely with elements. But yeah, East would be air, and West water. Yeah. And yeah, that's just what I always worked with, and it was a big deal in my practice for a long time.
And you know, and I think even just the point that you know, where you're like, oh, wait, is that right? And you were trying to figure out, like, which one goes where, mm-hmm. points to one of the things that I think comes up with elements, which is that it can be really confusing because we have a sort of understanding of them that is based on maybe some inherited ideas that we've picked up from books or that we've picked up from other mm-hmm. systems. But lots of people have different systems, and that's going to be really, really kind of crucial as we talk about this, is to remember that, you know, we're going to be barely scratching the surface to all the different kinds of elemental systems that people can get into, and, you know, which elements go where with which correspondences. The whole concept of correspondences is really interesting, but also really fraught. You have a lot of really complicated moving parts for people, so mm-hmm. I think that's important to keep in mind. And you said it was really important to you at one time, but I mean, do you consider it to be important to you now, or you know, where does it sort of sit within your practice currently?
I don't know. Like I used to like, you know, take the correspondences pretty heavily into consideration, you know, especially in writing a spell of some sort. I would say, okay, like, what is my outcome? Like, what is going to help me the most? Is it like I can't think of anything specific, so I'm sorry to kind of be speaking in vagaries, but like, do I need the passion of fire? You know, do I need kind of the flightiness of air? You know, like that type of thing. Like it, mm-hmm. And also I used to set up an altar keep an altar for a long time, and you know, the elements were always represented, and you know, I would change out you know, the water daily and light a candle and kind of do a little devotional at night and that type of thing. And it's just been a long time since I've done that type of work, that type of I don't like the word worship, but that's kind of what it was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just been a very long time since I've done that, so it doesn't play quite so heavily. I would say I'm a little bit more freeform now, but I really liked the structure that it provided. And if I feel like if I got back into it, like setting up an altar more and things like that, doing the things that I was doing, I feel like it would be kind of comforting. And I do think that I would fall back into it. So it's definitely not me saying, oh, I've outgrown it. You know, it's not mm-hmm. that type of thing. It's just not something I really do anymore, but I can see myself getting back into it for sure.
Very cool. And I mean, you know, you mentioned this idea of kind of setting it up in sort of an altar orientation. And that's kind of a big part of it too, is that a lot of people use the elements as a way of sort of creating a sacred space mm-hmm. For themselves. And, you know, you think about, you know, even these, you know, pocket altars and things like that. And we've had friends of ours who've made those things for us from time to time. And, yeah. You know, we've gotten different things. And I think even that the witch box that you got had sort of different directional correspondences that were kind of elementally associated as well. So, it, you know, there is a sense that, you know, you can use these different things to create sacred space based on kind of where you situate them, as well as kind of their specific energies. I mean, does that follow for you too? Does that track for your experience?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then I think something I'd kind of like to dig into a little bit, and I hope you will forgive me because I'm kind of trying to dig in a little deeper with this, and I realize it is late and we are probably both too tired to have serious philosophical discussions. So this may devolve back into Captain Planet discussions before we intend for it to. But, you know, why elements at all? You know, you made a good point about, like, not wanting to say, like, oh, I've outgrown it or anything like that. Because a lot of people use these systems and find them very, very effective. But we've also already mentioned there are a lot of versions of these systems out there. Why do you think we, sort of within magical practices and magical communities, want to use elements? What does having elements do for us?
I mean, I think it is too late for me to speculate on what other people might be feeling and, you know, kind of psych 101 anybody. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was more this is when I was coming from a, you know, a pretty harsh Christian background. Mm-hmm. You know, like one of the denomination that I was raised in can have many different forms. You know, like there can be some pretty liberal ones and there can be some really, really conservative ones, which I feel like is pretty much true with all Christian denominations. Mm-hmm. But I just felt very disconnected and disrespected as a woman. I mean, I wasn't really a woman then. I was, you know, kind of on that verge. But, and nothing really connected with me. And coming into something that was so heavily tied to the earth and it was tangible. I could, you know, I could hold it in my hand, and you know, like, this candle is fire, and like, this water is water, obviously. You know, like, the incense, what I would use incense for air, like stones, or a bowl of salt for earth, something like that. It's just everything I could hold in my hand, I could connect with. I could see how they balanced each other. It just spoke to me, you know. I don't really know how to describe it any better. Is that making sense? Is that ringing true with you?
I mean, absolutely. I think what you're kind of digging into there, the idea that, one, these are tangible things. These are things that you can physically identify and you can experience with your own senses. That's really mm-hmm. powerful. And that there is a tension that you can see, sort of the way that each one pulls against the other, mm-hmm. that you're creating dynamics and balance, but you can shift the weight of that balance by leaning more into one than the other. There's a lot of stuff there that you could unpack.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that that's there.
I also think, too, and this is just kind of coming to me, but I think with magic, it's so, especially if you're coming into it new and, you know, you've never done anything like this before, and it always seemed a little, or it was always presented to you as like kind of a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
And the things you're doing may feel a little silly. So having these tangible things that you're doing in this kind of like earth-based Wicca that I was doing,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't know. Most Wicca is earth-based, but you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Like in the kind of Cunningham thread, which is, you know, Scott Cunningham, the Wicca, A Guide for the Solitary Practitioner. I actually pulled out my old copy. It was one I really kind of heavily pored over, mm-hmm. and it really guided me, I guess. But so to do these things, I know what I'm trying to say. I just can't say it. I'm sorry.
Mm-mm.
To do these physical things to produce a, like a spiritual thing that you can't actually see, just helped me to kind of make it real and to feel like I was doing something real.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Like, instead of waving a wand, which, again, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I have used like a rose stem as a wand before in doing certain works. So I'm not trying to like disparage that, but I'm just saying, I don't think I could have started out with that, because I would have felt like, this isn't real. I'm not really doing this, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
So instead of doing that, instead of, you know, writing on a piece of paper and then and burning that paper and doing something with the ashes and like just doing physical things
mm-hmm.
with the earth to kind of communicate with the earth and produce things, you know, produce results, produce spells, really spoke to me and helped me. I hope I'm making sense.
That's spot on kind of what I'm thinking here. So yeah, I mean, that's just it. Is like, I think that this physical, tangible quality of the different things that you're using is really, really important. And I think that, so that's why I was asking the question about, like, you know, what do these do for us? Why, you know, why do we use elements? And my thing is that I want to kind of get at, like, why elements generally may be useful, because they are this really tangible, movable, controllable, you interact with them directly. Some people kind of think of them as kind of purist forms, but even if you don't think of them as kind of purist forms or sort of enlivened by some specific kind of spirit, you at least can see that these are the pieces that you're going to be using, the, you know, the different, they're the ingredients in the overall recipe that you're mm-hmm. making.
Yeah.
And you know the ingredients. If you know each of the ingredients well enough, you kind of have a sense of how that recipe is going to turn out.
Right. And there is and since there's a familiarity there, it just feels like you have more control over it mm-hmm. than if you're doing, you know, like sigils that you've never worked with. And like I said, like maybe, you know, like some sort of hand movement or wand, something like that, like that doesn't feel familiar, but you know, you've grown up knowing, no matter how it was presented to you, mundane or magical, you've grown up knowing what water is, what mm-hmm. fire is, that type of thing. And so you already have those kind of archetypes for those as well in mm-hmm. your head, I feel like. So, you know, like water can mean a lot of different things. You know, you've got like gentle rain and you've got terrifying thunderstorms and you've got just like a creek in the backyard, or you've got, you know, rushing rivers that sweep you away. So like you have all these different connotations mm-hmm. that can go with the elements that you, that are ingrained in you. And that I feel like it gives you a solid base for working it within magic, within spells, that so kind of gives you a leg up, because you know, you've never, maybe you've never seen like the abracadabra thing, and you've never thought of that as a magical, like an actual magical thing. And maybe you don't know the history of that. So like, I'm not sure if I'm making sense, but, like the, just having that, that solid base of something that you just know, mm-hmm. I feel like it helps kind of elevate your magic with the things you may not be quite so comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on with a lot of that. Now you mentioned the idea of like you know, the abracadabra spell is a good one, because you know it's something that has kind of come through pop culture to be
mm-hmm.
almost.
As I said it, I was like, this isn't a very good this isn't a very good example, because a lot of people do know that and as like a magic thing, but that was just all I could think of, but. No, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Right, because it's come through pop culture, it's really easy to kind of dismiss it. Whereas there is actually, like, there's a magical spell that comes from sort of a grimoire-based tradition where you can do this specific kind of written spell, and it uses that word. Okay, well, you know, so if you don't know that piece of it, then trying to do that written spell is probably not going to be all that effective for you. Whereas, like you're saying, because you have sort of grown up in Western culture, which is permeated with a lot of these different experiences of, you know, elemental things, you know, because you are going to encounter fire, you are going to encounter water, you are going to encounter air, you are going to encounter earth, those kind of neoclassical elements are familiar enough to you that they're easy to work with. They're the sort of lowest common denominator vocabulary that you can use, you know?
Yeah.
But that also being said, you know, since we're mentioning history, it's a neoclassical structure that comes through basically, you know, a bunch of sort of Neoplatonic writers, Iamblichus and, you know, Plotinus and people like that, who did all this you know, sort of thinking and structuring and pulling out of, you know, Grecian ideas, these four elements and this way of thinking about things that became really, really important to Western civilization. So like it's the underpinning of, like, you know, you think of things like the four humors, right? The mm-hmm. Our understanding of disease for a long time was influenced by this. You think about alchemy. Alchemy is hugely influenced by the use of this, and alchemy gives us chemistry. You know, and to some extent gives us physics later on. So a lot of the things that we sort of have in Western civilization are very touched by this concept of the four, you know, this four element system, mm-hmm. even if we don't readily acknowledge it. But that being said, it is also, you know, just kind of one interpretive thread of elements that exists, and there's a lot more out there. So I want us to, at least at some point, maybe circle back to talk a little bit about some alternative versions of that. But I also want to, you know, make sure that it's very, very clear that this influence has to do with how people kind of have a worldview. And if you have a worldview that the world is composed of these four elements in different balances, that's going to shape how you interact with that world too. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there. Thoughts on that?
None other than definitely agree. Cool. I I can't think of anything else I would add, but yeah.
Okay. So, so with that being said, the reason that, you know, I kind of brought up this whole idea of, you know, what are elements, what are, you know, this minimal kind of lowest common denominator language, a basic way of understanding the world around us. Again, because there's a lot of different people in the world, there have been a lot of different ways of looking at this. And so, you know, if this is the first time you've ever heard anybody mention the four elements, I apologize, because I think we're probably glossing over that a little quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that that's something that's pretty widely available. Like, I think most people have the ability to encounter that in other places, so I don't feel like we necessarily need to dwell on that there is this four element system that is used in Wicca. You know,
no, I don't think so either. I think that's pretty,
yeah,
common to come across.
Yeah, and we will talk
if
more.
If you haven't, I would like to know how, personally.
Right, like, there, we sang the theme song of the show. You surely know. And I mean, we'll circle back to maybe some, you know, some instances of the different elements in magical practice and stuff like that. But I do want to just, you know, at least acknowledge that there are these other systems out there. So, for example, like in the Chinese system, you have fire and air and water, which are same ones that you have in the Western system, but instead of earth, you have metal and wood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different take on that. If you're looking at kind of Northwestern Europe, and here we're looking at kind of like what we loosely would call the Celtic countries, they have a worldview that says land, sea, and sky. So their fire doesn't really enter into it because you don't have a specific fire element in there, but fire does kind of permeate all three in different ways.
Hmm. I never thought about it like that, but yeah.
Yeah, because you have, you know, the sun moves, the sun warms the sky, the sun penetrates the sea, the sun grows things out of the land, so you have that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ayurvedic medicine, they have the four basic elements, and then have you ever heard of Akasha?
Maybe.
Or had somebody say, like, oh, well, you know, in Wicca there's the four elements plus the element of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Ayurvedic. That's Ayurvedic elements, which is just the classic elements plus the sextra one, but it comes out of kind of India as well. And it also is the Captain Planet version. So,
yeah.
And one that's really this. So here's one that I think is really, really important to talk about. And that is the dualist version of elements, which is that there are two basic things that everything is made out of. And that can be, it can be, you know, good and bad. It can also just be light and dark. You know, those two things, you can even think, you know, matter and energy, right? Or matter and antimatter or something like that, if that's how you view it. But there is a tendency to try to simplify things down to two. You know, you think about like the yin and the yang, right? It's two things, mm-hmm, kind of pulling against each other. What do you do with that for you as a practitioner? Do you feel any attraction to that kind of dualistic?
A little bit. It's funny because almost all of the ones you mentioned, they all kind of worked. Like I say past tense, they still kind of do. But it's like I said, I just don't quite work the same way anymore, but mm-hmm. Anyway, I won't explain that again. But yeah, that all kind of worked in tandem for me. So I did have that fifth mm-hmm. element of spirit. I did kind of the sea, land, sky type mm-hmm. of thing. That kind of also factors in with a typical phrase you hear a lot, as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
And then, not so much the Chinese one, although I did kind of read about it and acknowledge it, but it just didn't feel right for me. It didn't mm-hmm. work with my system, I guess. And, also the duality, not so much with,
light and dark.
Everything. Oh, okay. Like it didn't apply to everything, but I definitely feel like, It's kind of an explanation for why there is no, you know, Satan or devil, like in witchcraft, mm-hmm. in Wicca. It because you need darkness and light together. You know, this is getting a little philosophical for me, but it all kind of worked together. It there wasn't like one thing that I would pick out of that, but I kind of believed, worked with all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, I'm kind of dragging you kicking and screaming down the corridors of philosophy, and I apologize.
No! <that. laughs>
Also, you said the phrase the fifth element, to which I simply must say multipass, but that's just me randomly. I love that you went there with that, because that I think is kind of the crux of it for me too. I have zero problem with people who work with elemental systems. I have zero problem with working with elemental systems. But what I think is really interesting is I think people are working with multiple elemental systems all the time, and they don't always acknowledge mm-hmm. that there are other elemental systems kind of underpinning what they're doing. Because it's so easy. It's really easy to kind of get yourself trapped in this mindset of like, oh, I need the four elements. These four neoclassical, Neoplatonic, specific elements, and then they have to go to these specific correspondences, and I don't see evidence of that kind of oversimplification and rigidity in magical practice at all when I actually look mm-hmm. at people practicing our folklore. It's always like, okay, so today, yeah, I do need to use fire and air to do this one thing, or I'm setting up an altar space, and today I do need the land, sea, and sky all represented. Also, I'm going to light a candle. You know, like
right.
There's multiple things going on, multiple layers, and I think that's one of the kind of really amazing things about magical practice, is that it is this sort of magical communication happening at multiple levels at the same time, and it. It's like this enormous conversation going on with the universe around you, and you know you get to be a part of all of it, happening at once.
That's so funny. You hit on something that we both talk about a lot, in that we enjoy about magic in general, in that the multiple conversations, the mm-hmm. duality of certain mundane things, mm-hmm. and the kind of secrecy of that, and mm-hmm. how that can be magical.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah, so you can have your elemental things sort of represented on your everyday bookshelf and be having a conversation with the universe in the sort of everyday experience of things. I mean, that's largely, if you think about feng shui, right? Feng shui is all about like arranging the space around you mm-hmm. to be having this ongoing conversation somewhat based on an elemental system. I know that was kind of a random thing to throw in there, but what you're saying sort of made sense.
I gotcha. I do some feng shui stuff.
Well, there you go.
No, so I don't like, you know, subscribe to, I'm not like intense about it or anything, but there are definitely some things that I kind of keep in mind when I'm setting up a room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and I think there's reasons for that. I think there's, mm-hmm. you know, I don't necessarily want to say like, you know, magpie, every system for what works best for you. For some people that might work fine. But I think what we're really just talking about is like, oh, I recognize that there are certain things that are going to be important to me, important to sort of my well-being in this space, that are related to how I understand these objects to be speaking to other objects in the same space, or speaking to me, or speaking to people who come through my house, etc. You know,
mm-hmm.
you're sort of setting them up. And the elemental aspect of that is huge, so...
Yeah.
Okay. So let me throw another kind of weird, wacky curveball at this.
Okay.
Which is, so then what do you do kind of, with the, what it's sort of called the contemporary scientific elemental system, where you have, you know, 118 periodic table elements, like, you know, it sounds silly, but I feel like there has to be a space for saying like, look, if we're talking about the building blocks of the universe, these are literally the building blocks of the universe. And it makes me think of I think it's an XKCD comic where the guy is like riffing on Avatar Airbender, but he happens to be like an Einsteinium bender. And so he can bend Einstein-y him at will, but like, how much of that is there really available in the
world? Everything changed when the Einsteinium's attacked.
Runs like this like little flake floating through the air. anyway. You know, can we, I don't know, I don't think we can prescribe this for anybody or anything. I just kind of wanted to throw it out there, like, you know, what do you do with that? You know, do you see anything with that?
That definitely gets too, okay, I might like regret saying this because it sounds really airheaded, but it's a little too sciencey for me. Mm-hmm. it just doesn't, that just doesn't compute, I guess, with me at all. Like, that would not work. But that's not to say that it wouldn't work for somebody else. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah.
Well, one of my mantras is, you do you. You know, as long as it doesn't hurt, you do you.
Yeah. And that makes total sense. It makes me think of, so there's a scientist named Oliver Sacks who, one of his things was every year on his birthday, somebody would give him a new element. And he was collecting them in this wooden box to have all of the elements of the periodic table. And like, there's a piece of me that's like, one, hope most of that is lead lined, because some of that is very radioactive. but two, like, there is something that's kind of cool about being like, oh, I have the building blocks of the universe here in my living room. I don't necessarily like, I can't necessarily say like, you know, like I invoke the angelic spirits of helium and I invoke the infernal powers of, I don't know, ferrous iron, you know, like I'm not going to do that necessarily. But, like, there is something that's kind of cool about, like, oh, I can see that as an underlying, you know, mechanical part of the universe, and, like, that helps me to understand the universe in a certain way. So, yes, I can see maybe magic tying into some of those periodic table things. All of which is also to say, like, personally, I don't do it, and I'm not exactly sure how it works. So, if you do it, if you're a listener out there that does this, I would really like to know about it.
You know, it's funny because I don't think, now that you've kind of phrased it that way, mm-hmm. it's not too far from using particular stones
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, gems or whatever in spell work. Like, you know, the emerald is a naturally occurring pretty jewel that, yes, we do use as, you know, in jewelry and all that. And it's a birthstone. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's always held the symbolism of money, and I actually had some, I don't know how I came across them, but I've had some uncut emeralds and used them in different spells, and they've always worked fantastic for me. So I don't feel like that's that much of it. Like, if you have a certain correspondence for helium, then, you know, use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree that, like, that's an interesting way of doing things. And again, like, my thing is, like, when we started talking about elements, it was just one of those things that I was thinking about, and I was like, I know somebody out there has to be doing it. So this is, mm-hmm. this is me essentially fishing for that. If you are out there listening and you use the elements, I would love to hear how that works. Also because so much of magic is based on sort of non-rational mm-hmm. systems. Which is not to say that they are anti-rational or that they are, you know, anti-science or something like that, but rather that they sort of work on the individual and the particular as opposed to the generalizable. And science is much more about, like, let's draw general principles from repeated observation. So it's a much more, it's a rational system. Like, can you perform this experiment 27 times and get the same result 27 times? That's science, whereas spell work is like, I need this really one specific thing to happen, and I'm going to do this really particular set of things to sort of edge it that way.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause spell work is, again, more of a conversation than a set of computer instructions in the way that I look at it.
Right. Yeah, we'll often do something because we think it might feel right, and then it usually ends up, you know, working really well.
Yeah, or terribly, and there shall we do it again, you know? And that's fine too. Like, that's kind of, again, it's a conversation. So I think, like, if somebody is using these kind of, like, scientific elements, I'd love to know, like, how they reconcile this kind of two sides of things. And I also, you know, sort of kind of think about, like, elemental systems as something that you can maybe not develop entirely whole cloth for yourself, but that you can kind of look to existing things that you do. You know, one of the kind of big trends in witchcraft in the past 10, 15 years has been this sort of specialization of witchcraft. So people will now be a hedge witch or a green witch, mm-hmm. kitchen witch, things like that. And
I've noticed that too.
And nothing against that. I think that's really, really interesting. And, you know, that's what people do. And it's, like you said, you do you, right? Mm-hmm. And I love it. I love it in a lot of ways. But it makes me go like, oh, what, you know, if you're a kitchen witch, your elements, sure, you can use your four elements, but you should probably also be looking at like, oh, I also need to be looking at the elements of sour and sweet and salty and hot and, you know, or if you're a crafting witch, if you're somebody who's involved with crafting, maybe you're looking at synthetic and natural, you know.
And a blend.
Blend. Right. Like maybe you're looking at these, you know, the way that fiber works. For part of your practice and saying like, what are the elements of fiber? Can I combine those in a specific way? Because again, it's about tangibility and make something magical happen that way. Does that make sense? Am I being crazy?
Yeah. No, not at all. I like it's something I wouldn't really have thought of, but yeah, you're right.
Well, cool. I'm glad my weird, crazy theory is not quite as weird and crazy.
It may be. I may just be used to you by now.
Yeah, it happens. He grows on you like a fungus, you know.
Well, you are a fun guy. Oh, that was terrible.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. I apologize for that one.
That hurt. I'm supposed to make dad jokes. So taking for granted this idea of earth, air, fire, and water as kind of important systems. One of the things that you talk about is kind of the correspondences for you and, you know, where that all, you know, where they fall in terms of direction or what they can do. And I'm curious, you know, you're going to be drawing mostly kind of from your experience and practice. And I found some examples in folklore that might sort of illustrate different elements. And I thought it'd be interesting to kind of bounce those around and see what we make of those.
Okay.
And so kind of looking to folklore on water, a lot of what I found had to do with things like naming ceremonies or cleaning, like removing things ceremonies. So like you would have like baptisms and anointings, but you'd also have like washes and baths, for example, and like conjure hoodoo practices for people who are working from African traditions. Voodoo mm-hmm. has head washings. Even in Protestant spirituality, mm-hmm. they do like foot washings. Like Ozark witchcraft initiations, they'll do things where like you can either unbaptize yourself by going in the water, or you can like wash something off ritually that has like the Lord's Prayer on it, and that will remove that so that you can initiate yourself into the whatever branch of witchcraft. So does that ring true to you in terms of your practice of witchcraft?
What do you mean?
Like, so do you feel like So when you think of water, is it sort of cleansing,
yes.
renaming, you know, using it as sort of a naming tool, sort of washing away previous conditions? Is that sort of what you see?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. It has other connotations for me, too, that are hard to describe. But, you know, those are personal. I feel like everybody's going to have those. And I think that's kind of where your geographical location comes in as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like someone from Florida is going to have a very different relationship with water than someone from Arizona.
Yeah, totally. That's a huge point. And even when you're talking about like the directions where things correspond, a lot of the ones in Wicca and even Europe are sort of based on the European geography and may mm-hmm. not ring true to somebody in America or, you know.
Right.
You know, South may not be exactly fire for you, or, you know, East may feel a little more watery to you if you live in, you know, Atlantic City, you know, that may be more water oriented on your compass. So that's a really interesting point. I like that. Fire. So when you think of fire, what are the elemental associations you make with fire?
The elemental associations?
Yeah, like, so how do you use... So if you think about witchcraft in your practice and the way that you've practiced it, what does fire do for you?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I said before, it's kind of passion to me. It's also kind of cleansing, but I'm having a hard time describing it. I hate to use the element in the definition of the element, but in a more fiery way, you know, like it's just kind of harsher. It's not quite as rebirth. It's more just like burning down the house.
Yeah. So like water is almost a reset button and fire is like an eject button.
Yeah, but it's funny because fire still can have that because I do have kind of the phoenix imagery going as well. But it's just different. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. But I do use fire a lot when, you know, disposing of things. Like a lot of times people will tell you, you know, you need to dispose of this in running water. And that was never something I really had access to, but I always had access to a lighter or matches. And,
in a troubled childhood,
sounds really creepy. No, I've always liked candles, you know, or just light a candle and kind of burn it in the flame. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I would write a spell or something when I was still living at home, and it would not be good to have it found. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. So I would do said spell and then I would burn it. And there was no evidence. And yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a little smoky in my room, but let's just open the window. It's no big deal, you know? And it just felt like, okay, it's done. It's gone. I'm good. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, fire in some ways feels almost like, I don't love quantifying it this way, but the most magical of the elements, just because it's so immediate in the way that it transforms whatever it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I can definitely see that. Yeah,
because it's funny because I'll still do things like that. You know, I'll write a petition paper, or you know, I'll write out something that I want to work on, like, on myself, you know, that type of thing. And I'll burn it to kind of send it up into the atmosphere. But it's funny because those correspondences we were talking about, you know, it is fire and it burns, but then it kind of turns to air. Like it, you know, it floats up into the atmosphere to whoever is listening, I guess. And so those have always kind of been linked in an odd way in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of traditions where, like, fire and religious ritual go hand in hand because there just seems to be this immediate connection between fire and the divine, right? So I can totally see that. And, I mean, candles, obviously, are a big part of a lot of religious traditions that are having, you know, candles or things that you can burn as a way of connecting with divinity or remembering the dead even or something like that.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of traditions, you know, again, kind of poking at folklore on this one, with bonfires and using fire, especially to mark like really big celebrations and holiday occasions and things like that. And oftentimes people are kind of using it to sort of purge away something. So like, you know, people even like shooting guns on the New Year's Day. That's, you know, using fire in a very specific way to bring in the new year and scare away evil from the previous year
I never thought about it like that, but yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Or, you know, think about like, you know, Walpurgis Nacht fires, like bonfires and things like that, and leaping over bonfires or, you know, running around them. That's a pretty big one. So yeah, it's just, I feel like there's a lot of using fire as a way of getting at festival purification, like group purification is a big part of it too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Air. Now this is, so air is weird to me. Air is one of those ones that, so I'm a Gemini, and so therefore technically, again, you know, the elements get tied to specific signs too, so like when you do that. So I'm a Gemini, and therefore I'm supposed to be an air sign, which is a little harder. We talked about the tangibility, and air is the least tangible, yet also one that we are really, really aware of. Like if you step out on a cold, windy day, you are very aware of air. You know, when you burn incense, you're very aware of how smoky it gets, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, so I think it's one of those ones that like, it's a little harder to define, but it is interesting to me. It gets associated a lot with like weather magic. There's some travel and some intellect. Like there's a lot of like communication.
It has always been travel based for me. And I honestly think that's because I read that correspondence in a book somewhere. It was probably, you know, like a Cunningham book or just, you know, one of those kind of Wicca 101 books that are pretty prevalent out there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the creativity and the color yellow travel, that's always been air based for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, where, you know, think about like, why would air do that? Well, I mean, airplanes and sailing ships both depend upon air to get you where you're going to go. Right. So that makes total sense. Speaking of sailing ships, that was a lot of the folklore I found were things like, or sailors who are on ships that don't have wind can buy wind by throwing money over the side, but you only want to throw the smallest amount possible because even the tiniest bit that you buy can become too much really quickly.
Right.
Tying or untying knots can be a way of releasing wind. So there's a lot of like, we need wind, but we also recognize that wind is pretty crazy. So you only want to use a little bit of it. And I found like in Kirin Turismo, they actually use like smoke, incense smoke, as a purification rite. So I thought that was interesting because that's not, purification's not something I normally associate with air, but it's, it is interesting.
It's there. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then, you know, the idea of, so this is something that's interesting, and you being a fan of practical magic and me being a fan of practical magic, this will make some sense, but the idea of releasing things into air or into wind and having the wind carry them away can be a very magical act, because when you light something on fire, you know it's going to happen, right? Like that's, it's almost a guarantee that if you hold a piece of paper in fire, you know what's going to happen to that paper, and it's transformative and it's magical and it's powerful, but it's predictable. Releasing something in air and actually seeing it like picked up and carried away from you is, it feels very confirming. It feels like it's saying, yes, this is actually happening for you. It's almost like it finalizes it because it shows you that element or whatever is working in conjunction with you, is actually cooperating.
And so, like, you know, it's funny. I don't know if this applies. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But that reminds me of when we had to do a ritual that was inside. And we had asked for some sort of sign. And one of them being
a gust of wind
or the bark of a dog or the call of a bird. And so we had expected, like, the most common would be the bark of a dog. I had three dogs that were very easily set off and were barky dogs. And it's just, that's what kind of what we expected to hear if we were going to hear any of them. Mm-hmm. And it was late at night, so we probably weren't going to hear a bird call unless it was maybe an owl or something. And we were inside, so we were like, you know, the window wasn't open. And we were like, we're not going to hear a gust of wind or feel it because it's just not going to happen. And then my air conditioning kicked on, and we like felt it on our necks. You know, it was like immediate. Oh, like this. Like it just felt like someone was listening and had a sense of humor a little bit. So yeah, I don't know if that quite goes with what we're talking about, but that's what that reminded me of.
I totally feel you on that. Again, it's weird. It's like wind has this. And maybe it's because it's kind of a breath sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. So we identify with it in a different way. But there really is something to, I don't know, having wind work. That I don't know. It seems like it's very. It's and it again. Weather magic is kind of like that too. If you do weather magic and the weather actually changes on you, then it can be very, very. It's confirming what you've done, but at the same time, it's also a little unsettling. You're like, oh,
it is.
Ooh, what is? You know, are there unexpected consequences I need to be prepared for? You know, like there's a moment for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done some weather magic in my day.
Right.
And yeah, it's very empowering, but yeah, it can be a little scary too.
Yeah. It's funny because when people think of like the destructive elements, I don't know the air is the first one that they would jump to, but it's probably the one I have a lot of love for, but I'm a little trepidatious about it sometimes. So
yeah, I've been very close to a tornado before, and so yeah, like too much wind terrifies me. But you know, like it's like we were talking about, it's kind of where you grow up, and you know, we've like our state is not, you know, in Tornado Alley or anything like that, but it's had some pretty destructive tornadoes. And I mean, clearly I'm afraid of hurricanes, but I don't have to worry about them.
Right.
But I actually have to worry about tornadoes here, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And hurricanes, I mean, certainly are intense and powerful and things like that, but they're also a little more like, oh, I know that's coming. Mm-hmm. Whereas tornadoes are like, it might be. Oh, there it is, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it can just change course. No big deal.
Cool.
But anyway, sorry, getting off topic a little bit.
No. I think it's all kind of, it works together. It's all tied up. So Earth, you know, what I kind of looked at in folklore, I saw a lot of discussions of like Earth really being basically plants and animals or, you know, maybe gardening, but healing was a big thing. There were a lot of things that drew upon Earth as kind of a healing element. So like using clay or mud to heal ailments and things like that, you know, using rubbing mud on a poison ivy rash, things like that.
That's interesting. When you were saying you're Gemini, I'm a Virgo. And so Earth is my corresponding element. And so I feel like I have a little bit of a different relationship with it. It's always been more like, again, I'm sorry to use this word within the definition of the word, but earthy. It's always been more grounded.
Oh.
It's always been kind of logical, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because it is plants and animals, but it's more like, the ground we walk on. Like, I don't mean the earth as in like the globe. I mean like the thing that I put my feet on. And, it always like when, you know, they would, in a lot of spells, it kind of tells you to, you know, kind of ground and center. And that always really connected with me, I guess. That always felt right and powerful as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't really know like how else to describe it, but it just has like a grounding force.
Yeah, no, I think I understand it. And there's also a sense of like being connected with it as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think about like ashes to ashes, dust to dust, or you know, again, in kind of like hoodoo practices, a lot of hoodoo practitioners will collect the dust from someone's footprints to use because it's connected to them. Grave dirt, I mean, obviously is sort of connected to the person even after death. So, you know, I think all of that is absolutely true. It didn't happen to be the thing I came across when I was
looking for it. That is interesting, though. But yeah, I've never really thought of it as like a healing thing, but I can see that.
Yeah, I think that may also be, you know, contemporary practitioners of, you know, any number of kind of healing things will tend to use, or you know, mud baths are a really common thing at like a spa, for example, or using like a clay mask to clear up someone's face is not unusual. So, just, you know, it's one of those things where I think like that's Earth has jumped. Just magical use and into kind of everyday use in a sort of pseudo magical way. So just something to think about. Any other thoughts on earth, air, fire, water? Fart!
The monkey.
Mati. Okay, so Earth, I think, is a good place to jump in and transition to our magical object of the episode, but we'll take just maybe a quick break and then come back for that. Hi there, everybody. This is Corey. Wanted to take a moment to tell you about one of our Patreon sponsors who produces a number of magical supplies that I think you might be interested in. Contra Cardia offers handmade spiritual supplies with the authenticity that practitioners crave. Voodoo, hoodoo, Santeria, folk magic, pagan, spiritualists, and all craft practitioners will find a full line of handcrafted items for daily use and celebration. Contra Cardia also offers a complete line of rootwork services, tarot, and bone-throwing readings. These are completely customized, performed for you, on your behalf, and always include a free consultation. Rootwork services and readings offer you a multifaceted and comprehensive approach to reaching your goals. If you're interested in more, please contact Momocera at conjurecardia@gmail.com for your consultation. Okay, so we left off with talking about Earth, and funnily enough, I don't know. Our object submitted this time around is very Earth-based, but maybe not entirely Earth-based, and so I think that'll be something worth discussing. Do you want to read the little section of the email we have?
No, you read it, because there's words I really don't know how to pronounce.
Fair enough. Oh, you think I'm going to pronounce them. I ain't going to pronounce them.
I do.
So this person says, it's at my job where I find my objects in question. You see, the whole farm where I work is gravel, and I've been finding fossils. My favorite ones are the complete and perfect shells. From what I can find from a Google search, they are brachiopods, maybe called sciencey word. Here is the site where I found the picture, and they show me some pictures. I'll try to throw that up in the show notes. By now, I have quite the pile on my dresser, and I'm sure they could be used in something magical. Look forward to hearing your ideas. This is from listener Nora. So these fossilized fossils in general, I think we've talked about fossils at some point before, but the fossilized shells in specific, I'm curious, you know, what do you make with that?
Well, it's cool. It's kind of what we've been talking about the whole time with how the elements sort of intertwine with each other. You know, she's finding them in the earth, but they kind of look water based. I don't know. What about you?
I agree. That's exactly kind of where I ran with it. I was like, oh, this is interesting, because you definitely have a water-earth hybrid item where this used to be a living creature from the sea, but it is now essentially a mineral. It's a mineralized deposit in that shape, and it is this... this earth-based object that remembers the sea. So, I mean, and we've talked about fossils as, you know, being used as an ancestral connection, ancestral practice. I think that you could certainly do this, although this, to me, seems much more like your primordial ancestors than particular individual ones. But I was thinking, like, if you have shells like this, they would work really, really well, in my opinion, as you said sort of at the top of the episode, looking towards an altar, finding something that can be representative. If you put a little candle on one of these shells, or surrounded a candle with these shells, and, you know, maybe use some incense or something like that, that's, I mean, a complete altar right there, if that's kind of what you're going for. What about you? Did you see that use for it as well, or is there something else?
For sure, yeah. If you're looking to kind of simplify, I can see that working for you. Or if you're kind of going for, you want something on the go and you need to take as few things as possible, I think the ability to double up is really nice. I feel like one of our jobs, one of our things we should be on the lookout for is something that can represent all four elements at once. And I don't know. I think that would be interesting. But yeah. Anyway, that's an aside. But I'm trying to come up with other things for these. They honestly remind me of, especially if you have so many of them, they remind me of, I don't know why. This is just kind of me pulling this off the top of my head, like game pieces or dice or I don't know, like something you'd hold in your hand and you know, like throwing marbles or something. That's kind of what they're looking like to me as I'm looking through this site.
Yeah, no, they so there's a lot of systems of divination where you use shells, and like you'll throw three shells and depending on how they land face up or face down in different orders, that will give you answers to yes or no questions. And it's called geomancy. It's different types of geomancy that they do this with. And I feel like these shells would lend themselves very well to that.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah. I mean, and again, you're drawing, so this is like, you know, drawing upon kind of the ancient, most primordial source of the earth and saying like, I'm going to go way, way, way back. I'm looking at all time. You know, these might be for like kind of the big questions and maybe use newer shells for simpler, easier questions. So you can kind of rank your divination system that way if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that'd I think throwing the shells, preferably on something soft. What if you did it in like a bowl of sand? Like if you had a little bowl of sand and you tossed them to see how they would land.
Yeah, I like that. You know, you could even like pass one through a flame to kind of give it a different look. You know, like it would probably, I don't know, honestly, it might like blacken it up a little bit or something, like just to kind of, and then that would also kind of imbue that fire into it as well. Yeah, I like the idea of the throwing the shells. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that seems like a fairly straightforward way of doing it. I also think, you know, something else that, I mean, this is a sort of random way of using it and kind of goes off of what we're far away from what we're talking about. But if you could pound these out and grind them into some sort of like sort of a powder that you could blow or toss in front of somebody, especially somebody that you're trying to slow down, that you're trying to get to, you sort of like, you know, slow their roll. Maybe they're, you know, things are moving too quickly for you in some way, shape, or form. This would be a good way to kind of like get them to slow up and take their time, and not move hastily through whatever decision they're trying to make. Just a random thought, just because, you know, fossilization is an incredibly slow process. Would be a good way to kind of get them to sort of slow what they're doing down too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of what other ways you could use like the powdered form. I don't know. Nothing comes to mind.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much further we can go with that. It would be really kind of cool. Like thinking about like the time aspect of that, if like you could fill an hourglass with powdered shell,
that'd be neat.
And like use this sort of like powdered, ancient and sort of powdered ancient energy to sort of like set a timer on something in your life, you know.
Yeah.
And like say like this is, you know, name the grains of sand for like these are how many minutes it will be until it whatever it is that I want to do comes to be, or you know, as you know, this I will turn this hourglass every day for so many days to get what I want, you know, basically.
That's a great idea.
Controlling the timing of your spell.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That's a great idea.
Yeah, but that does involve smashing them up into tiny pieces, right? So if you like them as they are, maybe do the throwing for divination thing. So just a thought. Okay. Well, cool. Can we send Captain Planet back?
I think so.
Can he go back in his? I don't know. Where does he go after? I knew the theme song. I don't know what happens to him after he's done. He just kind of disappears, right?
Do not know.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Well, we're gonna send him back into his hidey hole.
Into the globe, I guess. Into the globe.
We're gonna go talk to Gaia, the spirit of the earth. who I think was voiced by Whoopi Goldberg. Am I crazy? It was Whoopi Goldberg, wasn't it?
I don't know. That's so funny if you're right, though.
Anywho, okay, it's late. We're clearly kind of getting random.
Get a little loopy.
We are getting a little loopy. Lane, if people want to find out more about us and what we do and anything New World Witcher related, how can they do that?
Well, there are many ways. We have our website, which is newoldwitchery.com. We can, you know, listen to old podcasts or leave us a comment. You can, a lot of people like our posts, which is very, I appreciate that. You can email us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
Absolutely.
You take some of the social media stuff.
All right, social media, that's me. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find our Facebook page and like us there. We will not sell your data to the Russians. We won't. I don't know who else
we
will.
Won't.
We have no control over that. You also have a page on Pinterest called The Old Broom that you can look at, and that's a, you know, I post things a little more infrequently than I'd like, but sometimes there's some really fun kind of magical stuff that I'll find that just seems like the best place for it. Or you can leave us a voicemail. We love voicemails on our official New World Witchery hotline, 442-999-4824. It's 442-99-WITCH. So we do love getting voicemails. We save those. Athena Beth, one of our awesome patrons, recently just left us a really good voicemail, and I'm hoping to find a way to incorporate that at some point. But
cool. Well, that also leads me to, you could, if you want to kind of check out what supporting us would mean for you, you could look at patreon.com/newworldwitchery. We've got several different levels and some pretty cool things there for you. So check that out.
Yes, we do. Yeah, I just sent out our, so for our $5 plus patrons, you get like a little annual mailer. It's you know, nothing super fancy, but you get like a little envelope with just different stuff. And one of the things that it had was stickers that are all protected by witchery, and they're different, like so the abracadabra spell is one of the stickers that you can just stick it on stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it is protected by witchery. So so we send out fun little stuff like that every once in a while. Cool. So that covers the elements, but also, I should say, doesn't cover all of the elements. There's so much more we could get into, so much more we could discuss, but we felt that we'd been a little remiss in not talking about it up to this point. So, job done.
Yeah, hope you enjoyed that.
Indeed. We may circle back to stuff from it another time, and we'd love to hear from you if you have thoughts on it. So do feel free to contact us. But until next time, thanks so much for listening.
Be well.